Brisbane, Australia, Adam Devlin on iTunes International.
This is Bondi Tunes International broadcasting around the world, and we welcome our listeners on FM in Canberra, Australia, and Wellington, New Zealand. I'm Henry in Sydney, and yes, both of those cities are the capital of each country. Adam Devlin is our Australian political correspondent, and he joins me from Melbourne. Hey, Adam.
I joined you from Brisbane.
Oh, did I do that?
You just said Melbourne.
I know. I was talking to Rachel for half an hour, and she is in Melbourne. Okay, well, that was a good start to this interview. Adam Devlin is in
today,
Brisbane.
Considering...
What?
I was just going to say, considering it was like 19 in Melbourne and 37 here today, I wish I was in Melbourne.
Oh, is that right? Oh, it was about 37?
Yes, at lunchtime when I went out, it was 37 degrees where I work.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, it looks like summer, after 2 years of La Nina, summer is finally back in Australia, and we can moan about it all summer long. Okay, Adam Devlin in Brisbane. Now, some very sad news. Kirsty Alley has died at the age of 71 from a very short illness, cancer. And, you know, when I think about things like this, Irene Cara, of course, died a week before her, and she was 63. And she's like only, sorry, I think it's 63. Anyway, she's, 3 years older than me. I mean, it does make me think about the longevity of life at the age of 60. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, it's, I said to a friend the other day, you know, it'd be really nice if idols and people I respected and looked up to could stop dying now. It's making me feel very old and fragile.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, people, the longevity of people's lives is, you know, increasing because of medical technology. But you see, the thing about Kirsty Alley particularly is that, you know, this cancer was not for a long time. So how do people prepare her beautiful children and her family and even fans? How do you prepare when you've got so little time?
You don't. You can't. You just have to respond and react once it happens. You know, from a very personal level, I go back to the morning that it was announced that Olivia Newton-John had died, you know, 4 months ago.
Yes.
And, you know, I of course, I knew she was ill. I knew she wasn't 100%, but no one had any idea that she was that close to dying. And so when it's announced, it just hits like a brick on your head. It's like it's, and you know, Kirsty Alley today, she hadn't even announced that she had cancer.
Yeah. You know what, Adam? I think a lot of these famous people basically get out of the media. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, the thing with somebody like Kirsty is that she was such a vivacious person. And when she was in the public eye, she was so enigmatic and fun and full of life that with no indication of her being ill, when you then just, you know, you click on a news website and the first thing you see is Kirsty Alley has died, you know, and it really does take your breath away. It just floors you.
Yeah. And of course, she was very famous for a long time, actually. Of course, there was Cheers.
Yes.
Did you watch Cheers in the 80s?
I watched bits of it. I wasn't an avid... The thing is, when Cheers was going to air, where I was living, it wasn't really regularly shown. So I've only ever seen it in reruns.
Is that right?
I never saw it when it was originally aired in Australia.
Interesting, because I was in the UK or Ireland or somewhere like that, and I was never a huge fan of Cheers, quite honestly. I know that Shelley Long was the original barmaid, to use a dated term, in Cheers, and of course Kirsty took over her role and was equally successful, which is not easy to do.
Well, I would go so far as to say she was more successful. She certainly was in more seasons than Shelley Long was. Mm. And, of course, Shelley Long left Cheers because she was pursuing a film career. And Kirsty left Cheers and ended up with a much more successful film career than Shelley Long did. You know, Kirstie Alley.
I was going to correct you, but I'm far too polite.
Yeah. You know, she starred in a range of really successful films. You know, some of the more successful ones are the Look Who's Talking,
Look Who's Talking Too,
and Look Who's Talking Now.
Oh, was a third one.
There was a third one, yes.
they were with John Travolta? No.
Correct, yes.
Oh,
yes,
they were? Okay.
Yes. Mm. And then, you know, some of her other hit films, there was Sibling Rivalry, She's Having a Baby, Summer School, Blind Date back in 1984, Drop Dead Gorgeous in 1999. Mm. You know, her film career was long and varied. She did a lot of comedy, but she also did some drama in there as well.
I was going to say, a lot of it was comedic, wasn't it? But she did do some serious drama, as far as I understand.
She did, absolutely, did some dramatic roles. But her, you know, her bread and butter was comedy. She was a comedic actress.
And she was damn good.
Yeah. And, you know, some of her TV work, I mean, of course, there's Cheers, which we've already talked about. But then, you know, after that, she had her own series, Veronica's Closet, which ran for three seasons from 97 to 2000.
Yes.
Which was, I really enjoyed Veronica's Closet. I thought it was great. You know, she guest starred in a lot of shows like Dharma and Greg and Glory Days. And then she had another series in 2005. It only lasted one season, called Fat Actress.
Yes, and I want to bring that up because she was given a hard time over her weight loss, weight gain, weight loss, weight gain through the decades.
Absolutely. And look, I think that...
she was getting them back in a way, wasn't she?
Well, in a way, but I also think, you know, the pressure on somebody like Kirstie Alley, somebody who is naturally a larger woman, to fit the mold of a Hollywood actress is you know, it's a vile thing to have to deal with. Mm. And I think, you know, as you're exactly right with what you just said, you know, her weight fluctuated wildly from you know, approaching morbid obesity to almost, you know, looking anorexic at times. And that's not healthy for a person to do that. And not only physically not healthy, it's not healthy emotionally either to go through that sort of change.
And especially being in the media all the time, you know.
Constantly. She couldn't step outside without it being mentioned in the media what she looked like and whether she was fat or thin. You know, it's a bastard of an industry like that.
But the thing is, this is a contentious issue, but they say things are getting better. But we're talking the 80s and 90s when the media was, you know...
Oh, they were truly vile.
Terrible.
Truly vile. Yeah.
Okay, now we've got to move on. But I just want to mention that Kirstie Alley, you know, she acted a lot with John Travolta. Kirstie Alley was also a member of Scientology. Did you know that?
Oh, pardon me. Yes, I did.
Mm. I wonder, did John, like, recruit her?
I believe that it was through her friendship with John Travolta.
Yep. Okay. Well, I'm not surprised.
I haven't confirmed that, but I've read that several places previously. Mm. But yeah, that is my understanding. And I just want to say, you know, I really do feel for John Travolta at the moment. He, in the last sort of 2 years, I think it is, he's lost his wife.
Yes.
And now two of his closest female friends in Olivia Newton-John and Kirstie Alley.
Yes.
You know, that poor man, he, you know, prior to that, he lost his son.
That's right, yeah.
So, you know, this poor man who gets quite a bad rap in the media, especially in the tabloid media, for everything from his ridiculous wigs to,
you know,
his weight. And then his you know, his questionable sexuality.
Oh, yes. That's another point, isn't it?
Yeah. And so,
what do you think, Adam?
Look.
Do you care?
No, not really. My opinion on this has changed over the years.
Right.
Years ago, I was a very big person in, very big advocate for people having to come out if they were gay. As I've matured and I've grown a bit and I, you know, I now think, well, what the hell does it matter?
Yes, absolutely.
Like, seriously, if you're an actor, the thing that's important is your performance as an actor. It's not who you go home and have sex with.
Yeah, Absolutely. Now,
and we as a general population have to get, at some point, get to the realization that, you know, these public figures, the people who we choose to have in our lives as entertainers, they're doing a job. They don't owe us anything, and we don't own them. They're people with emotions just like us, and they're entitled to their own secrets and desires as we are.
Indeed. And I just want to quickly also talk about Irene Cara.
Yes.
Now, she passed away at 63, about 10 days before.
Mm.
Now, she, of course, you know, I have great memories of her. What a fantastic singer she is, by the way.
She had an amazing voice.
Mm. Fame, of course, in 1980, Flashdance also in the 80s, they were the big things for her. And she was a very good actor as well. A lot of people sort of concentrated on her singing. But, you know, how did you... Were you a fan of Fame, by the way?
I wasn't such a fan of Fame at the time when it came out. It just didn't appeal to me then. I appreciate it much more now. Again, as I've aged and matured, I've gone back and looked at some of these things, and Fame really is iconic. Both the film and the TV series that resulted from the film are both iconic. And, you know, you just don't get TV series like that today. I mean, the closest thing we've had to Fame since it was on was Glee a couple of years ago coming out of America.
I was actually thinking about Glee because they sort of tried to do this, you know, 30 years later. And I don't know if they were successful or not, but were they? I think they must have been.
Glee was a very successful series, and I watched Glee, but it was very sanitized. Fame had a real grittiness to it. It had a real street edge to it.
Mm.
You know, they were street kids, and
working class in the Bronx kind of kids, you know.
Yeah, and they brought all of the issues, social issues with that into the series. Now, there was none of that in Glee.
Yeah, and I think at the time, you know, at the time moving on into the decades, things probably became more politically correct and you couldn't do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Now, if you just joined us, I'm talking with Adam Devlin, who is our political correspondent here in Australia. And he's not in Melbourne. He's in Brisbane. Adam, Harry and
Meghan. Can I just say, yes. Before we get on to Harry and Meghan, with Irene Cara,
yes.
She's, of course, best remembered for two songs, Fame and
On My Own.
Flashdance, What a Feeling.
Oh, Flashdance, okay.
Were her two big hits. Of course, she had some other hits as well. But those were her two number one hits globally. But what a lot of people I don't think realise is that although she didn't do many albums, she only had five albums out in her life, she was in a series of films and stage acting. She was a Broadway star. She starred on television shows, a range of TV shows. She was in Kojak. She was in Roots.
She was in Kojak? Really?
She was in an episode of Kojak, yes.
Wow.
And in films, you know, there was a whole string of films that she starred in as well.
Mm.
And, you know, nominated for many awards, including Academy Awards, American Music Awards, Golden Globes, and Grammys. She won an Academy Award. She won Billboard Year End Award. She won a Golden Globe. She won a couple of Grammys. You know, she was an amazingly accomplished entertainer.
Indeed. Now,
but a slow glowing dream that your fear seems to hide deep inside your mind. All alone I have cried silent tears full of pride in a world made of steel. May
Harry and Meghan. On Netflix, Netflix have just dropped a trailer, a bomb of a trailer, which has just been released to the world. And in that trailer, which I think is 30 seconds long for this series that they are about to make a lot of money out of, Harry in the trailer says, "No one knows the real truth." He's talking about, you know, the royal family, of course. He says, "We know the real truth."
Well, what a goddamn awful mess this is going to be.
Already is, I would proffer.
Absolutely, absolutely. Look, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. I must say, I haven't seen the trailer to the series yet, or to their special.
It's been on all the news bulletins, but I know you've been busy. It's you know, Harry really is going hell for leather. I can't help thinking that he's thinking about his mother, Princess Diana, all through this.
Yeah. Now, of course, I think it drops on Thursday of this week.
Oh, okay.
The doco, so we'll be able to watch it on the weekend. So if you want to chat next week, I'll be able to tell you what I think of it.
Yeah,
Because I'll certainly be watching it.
Absolutely, yeah.
But yeah, you know, I just think I've got some conflicting thoughts on them as a couple and what they're doing with their lives. First and foremost, if I understand why he wanted to get away from England and stop being a working royal. But, you know, if he was concerned about the security and protection for his own family, for his wife and children, maybe remaining in the public eye and earning their living through doing things such as documentary series and podcasts and such, maybe that isn't the wisest thing to be doing. Like, you know, if he's concerned about the protection and the safety of his family, maybe removing themselves from the public eye as much as possible would be a good idea. A better way to do that, a more successful way of doing it.
Especially, Adam, since that he has kind of left the royal family, gone to live in Los Angeles or wherever he's living in America. I think it's Los Angeles. It's kind of weird because he sort of stepped out of that limelight into another limelight.
Yeah, so he's basically swapped one fishbowl for another.
Yeah.
I find that puzzling. I mean, I get that, you know, he has, you know, he seems to be a conscientious young gent who wants to try and make a difference in the world. I get that. And, you know, he gets that from his mother and a little bit from his father, but predominantly from his mother.
Yes.
But, you know, you can do that without all of the media hoo-ha that he seems to be insisting on having. And I just think that, you know, he was independently wealthy anyway. I mean, he inherited a vast fortune from his mother.
Did he? I did not know that.
Yes. Something like £20 million.
British pounds.
Estimated British pounds. Yeah. Wow. Estimated.
Yeah.
Of course, her will has never been made public, but, you know, it was estimated that her and William, he and William both got about £20 million from her death. And so
you have to ask the question, Adam, why is he doing this, you know?
Yeah. I mean, of course,
does Meghan play a lot into this?
Look, I'm conflicted about my thoughts on her.
A lot of people are.
Yeah, I think for starters, you know, what did she expect when she married into the royal family?
Indeed.
Like, she's supposedly an intellectual, intelligent woman with a grasp on reality. So, you know, she must have known what she was getting into when she decided to head down this path. Now, but of course, we'll never know what went on behind the palace walls.
I'm wondering about this doco that's coming out, or whatever it is, series that's coming out on Netflix. I just want to mention another thing he said in the trailer. It's a dirty game. I mean, he's saying pretty full-on stuff in this.
Yeah. And look, it's an interesting thing to watch what's happening here. I mean, he is the son of the King of England.
Yes.
He's what, three, four, fifth in line for the crown. So, you know, he can never really be just an average citizen.
No, That's not going to happen.
No. But also, you know, him and Meghan could have just gone off and lived a very comfortable life privately.
Mm.
He would have investments. He would have his income source. As the son of the king, he would, you know, if he wasn't in the public eye, he would be looked after financially.
Of course.
But there's a certain amount, I think, of biting the hand that feeds you going on here. You know, I read some articles this week about him apparently constantly badgering Charles for money, which I find perplexing. Like, I don't know if the stories are true or not, but I've read them in several sources.
Yes.
But, of course, these sources are always from an unknown confidant or, you know, somebody close to the palace. They never name from.
No.
So you really can only take them with a bit of a grain of salt. But, you know, just, you know, if he really wanted to protect his family and, you know, make their lives safe, I would have thought the best way to do that would be drop out of the public eye.
Yeah. And now he resigned as working, they resigned as working yes. royals in 2020.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering how much Meghan is affecting this. And I'm not trying to knock her or anything like that. But, you know, they're a married couple. They've got a child, a second child, I believe. Mm. I don't know. Follow the royalty.
They have Archie and Lilibet, a boy and a girl.
Do you think that she's a big
Well, yes, see, I do.
That's a rhetorical question, isn't it?
Yeah,
of course she is.
I mean, she's his wife, so of course she's an influence.
Yeah.
And of course she's American as well. So, and they've ended up living in America. So, you know, you would have to say that she had an influence there. Hmm. You know, it's Hollywood is her town. It's not his town. So, again, there would be a big influence there. Yeah, and you know, if the stories that I've read about her, the way she was treated by the royal family whilst she was a working royal in London are true, then I have nothing but empathy for the woman.
Yes.
But we'll never know.
And,
I mean, their side will come out in the doco series, of course, but I fully expect within a month of that airing, the palace will counter that with something.
I know. That's
to give their side.
Just what I was thinking. Now, forgive me for not remembering the name of this man, but there was a man who was the king, and he left England for America. This is history repeating itself. He was
yes,
the king.
You're yeah.
What's his name?
It was Wallace Simpson was the woman.
Yes. Edward?
Mrs. Edward, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is very interesting because they're running along parallel lines with what's happening with Harry and Meghan, because I know that, you know, Edward was a king, but Harry was not. But it's very similar, isn't it?
Well, look, the parallels are quite there. I mean, of course, Edward the Eighth was heir to the throne. Harry's not the heir to the throne.
Yes,
but they both walked away from royal life to marry an American divorcee. It's quite interesting.
History repeating itself.
Absolutely. And it would only take for not that I would ever wish this, but it would only take for some sort of hideous accident to kill William. Catherine and their kids.
Yes.
And Harry is heir to the throne.
Frightening thought.
Yeah.
No offense, Harry.
So, you know, the parallels there are, you know, both of those men, senior royals, both of them, had to walk away from royal life for the woman they loved.
Yeah. Do you think it's time for a reboot of how royalty works, especially in the UK? Royalty seems much more modern in places like Denmark, you know.
Yeah. Look, I'm a staunch Republican for Australia. I absolutely
really?
Wholeheartedly believe that Australia should be a republic.
Oh, my God, that's a huge story.
But I think the royal family works for England. I don't know how England would unravel that mess of what would be owned by the royal family, what would be owned by the royal estate, what would be owned by the government.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. It would be such a mess to do. Now, of course, there has been rumours for years that when Charles became king that he would streamline the royal family and sort of modernise it and have a bit of a royal revolution In the way things are done with the royal family. And we may yet see that. I haven't seen any real signs of that yet.
No.
But, early you days. Know, yeah. It is early days. And you know, there's a lot of ridiculousness wrapped up in the royal family and the institution of royalty.
Mm.
But the English, you know, they're very popular in England.
And Australia, I would say.
And Australia, absolutely. Yeah. You know, they're very popular all over the world. You know, they're probably one of the most famous royal family. I think they are the most famous or the most known royal family on the planet.
Absolutely, by a long shot. Just joined us. I'm talking with Adam Devlin, who is our Australian political correspondent in Brisbane. I just want to move on here. I don't know if you know this, in Indonesia, it was announced today that sex outside marriage is now illegal in Indonesia, which is just up the road from us in Australia, and couples living together is now illegal. I mean, talk about going backwards, you know?
It's a very concerning development because, of course, Indonesia is the world's largest Muslim nation.
200 million.
Yeah, plus 200 plus million.
Right.
And one of they also made it illegal today to criticize the president.
Really?
Yeah.
They say they're
punishable by jail.
They say they're a democracy.
Yeah. Now, it's safe with that with their current president because he is a moderate and he's a decent leader globally. He wants to engage with the world. He understands that the rest of the world may not be Muslim and may not live by the same standards.
Mm.
But he's not going to be their president forever.
No.
And it only takes a hardline president to replace him at some point. And, our closest neighbor could become, a militant Muslim nation.
Yes. And, we're talking about parallels in this conversation we're having on Bondi Tunes International. It's very similar to Putin.
Yes.
Who his predecessor was a moderate, and look at Putin.
Mm, absolutely. Also, the laws that change today in Indonesia, it's very tricky because if, say, for example, an Australian tourist goes to Bali and has a one-night stand with an Indonesian.
Yes. And it happens.
And please, why do you think most Australians go there?
Yes.
It's not for the beaches.
No.
It's for the bitches.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting because we don't need to go there. If you're living in Britain or Ireland, you go to the Costa del Sol or somewhere in Spain or France. But we don't need to do that because we've got the heat anyway. So obviously it's other things.
But it's, a spouse, a parent or a sibling can report you for having non-marital sex.
How does this work? I mean, how do you...
Well, we don't know this. This
how do you
this
police
is one of
that?
The concerning issues is, if you go to Indonesia and you have a one-night stand with an Indonesian citizen and say that's a woman and her brother finds out about it and he reports you to the police and you're an Australian tourist, will you be arrested and thrown in jail?
It reminds me of Tasmania, Adam. Back in the day where being gay...
Yes.
And having sexual relationships with gay people was punishable by law.
Yeah, and of course, being gay is still illegal in Indonesia.
Yes, that's another thing.
Mm. Marriage equality doesn't exist there. So again, even more likely to happen is, a gay man goes to Indonesia, has a one-night stand with an Indonesian gay man, and his family, parents, father... siblings report that to the police. What will happen to that Australian citizen?
Yes, indeed.
Will they be arrested and thrown in jail?
That's a messy business, isn't it?
Yeah. Gosh. And if so, what would that do with our relationship with Indonesia?
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning that Bali is actually Hindu, at the island of Bali, which many of our listeners, especially in America, Americans love Bali. They've even created a movie. What is it called? Something in paradise. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't watch that stuff.
One day in your life, you'll remember a place, someone touching your face. You'll come back. Oh, you don't. find that you're always lonely. For the love we used to share just called my name, and I'll be there.
Going to go soon because I know you're stuck for time. You've been working all day. Just want to mention briefly, young drinkers are not drinking near as much as our generation. Now, Adam, you and I used to have a couple of drinks after work, especially on a Thursday when we got paid in Redfern, in Sydney. And
wasn't adverse to a cleansing ale.
Indeed. And a good chat, even with an open fire here in Sydney. Now, it's appearing to me, it's actually a fact that young people are not drinking as much. And, you know, the low alcohol and non-alcohol market is worth $152 million a year.
And it's growing fast.
And it's a new generation of drinkers who drink a lot less.
Mm.
What are they doing? Well, what else are they doing?
they're weak quitters.
What kind of Aussie bloke would do this?
Exactly. But what's amazed me, Henry, is I've seen a few things happen over the last sort of 12 to 18 months, which I find really interesting socially. Two of these things are an absolute explosion of alcohol-free, normally alcoholic drinks available. Like you in the supermarket now, you can get alcohol-free wines, alcohol-free beer, and now alcohol-free spirits. My local supermarket here has alcohol-free gin, alcohol-free tequila, alcohol-free scotch, all on the shelf for anyone to buy. And of course, the obvious end of that is Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, and I'm assuming Adelaide, Perth, and other cities in Australia now have alcohol-free bars and nightclubs.
Wow.
Where you can go along and spend the whole night dancing and, you know, and drinking cocktails and beer and wine all night and spirits, but none of it has any alcohol in it.
Look, I'm kind of sinister about stuff like this, only in the sense that I think if they're not drinking alcohol, they're doing something else.
Well, this is, I don't think there's been enough research done on that yet, but I tend to agree with you. I mean, back in the day when we were regulars on Oxford Street in Sydney, people who were just drinking water, they weren't necessarily looking after their health.
No, that's very subtle, Adam. Do you think the media has got a lot to do with this? Do you know the way, in the old days, teenage girls and boys would hide smoking cigarettes from their parents. Now parents are hiding smoking from their children.
Yes.
Isn't that interesting?
And I could imagine there's also a bit of pressure from some children towards their parents about their consumption of alcohol as well.
So that could play into this.
Yes. So, some righteous young'uns out there sort of looking at their parents getting drunk every night and going, you know what, I think I can make a better life choice than that.
That's fair enough, I guess.
Absolutely.
But you know what?
Let's be honest here. Australia's alcohol consumption is way too high for it to be healthy.
And it's the same with Britain. Britain's worse than Australia.
And America. I mean, we're all a nation of alcoholics.
Yes, all nations of alcoholics indeed. I just wonder, these idealistic kids, if this is all going to wear out as they suddenly have children and they have all the pressures of mortgages and all, because their money is all spent, you know, in socializing. My money was, you know, in my 20s and early 30s, and neither of us have had children. So, you know, it probably went a bit longer for us because we didn't have that pressure of having children, the expense of having children.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if these idealistic kids are going to kind of change their tune.
Well, look, they may very well do that. But I mean, I also think that what leads into it is that, you know, just the average cost of living, the cost of buying a house, the rental, they're all so much higher now as a percentage of income than what that was when we were younger. And so I just don't think a lot of young people today have the same sort of disposable income that we had to go out and, you know, spend three or four nights in a nightclub a week.
We were so lucky, Adam.
Oh, I look back at those days and I just go, wow, that was phenomenal. How we got through that, we got through it, first of all.
it's touch and go sometimes.
Yeah, and, you know, we're still here to talk about it.
It's amazing.
And that we, you know, we came through that, and, you know, we both own property. We've both got successful careers. We've both got successful relationships. You know,
and long-term relationships. I mean, you know, we're very lucky in the sense that, you know, over 50% of, and by the way, young people keep getting married. It's so in now, if only to just put videos up on social media like YouTube.
Yeah, and then get divorced 12 months later.
Exactly. Over 50% get divorced. Okay, Adam, I kept you 3 minutes over half an hour, for which I...
That's 3 minutes overtime. You've got to pay me.
Yeah, I'll mate the checks in the mail. Oh, no one uses no one uses checks anymore. I'll put it into your bank account. Adam Devlin is our Australian political correspondent and has been talking with me from Brisbane here in Australia. Thank you, Adam.
It's a pleasure, Henry. Cheers.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio. And thanks to Adam Devlin for that. Now, we have got permission from a website called Celebrities Biographer to air this kind of mini doco on Irene Cara. Take a listen.
Flame and Flashdance singer Irene Cara dies at 63. Oscar, Golden Globe, and two-time Grammy-winning singer-actress Irene Cara, who starred and sang in the title cut from the 1980 hit movie Fame, and then belted out the era-defining hit Flashdance, What a Feeling, from 1983's Flashdance, has died. She was 63. Her publicist, Judith A. Moose, announced the news on social media, writing that a cause of death was currently unknown. Moose also confirmed the death to an Associated Press reporter on Saturday. Cara died at her home in Florida. The exact day of her death was not disclosed. Irene's family has requested privacy as they process their grief, Moose wrote. She was a beautifully gifted soul whose legacy will live forever through her music and films. During her career, Cara had 3 top 10 hits on the Billboard Hot 100, including Breakdance, Out Here on My Own, Fame, and Flashdance, What a Feeling, which spent 6 weeks on number 1. She was behind some of the most joyful, high-energy pop anthems of the early 80s. Tributes poured in on Saturday on social media, including from Deborah Cox, who called Cara an inspiration, and Holly Robinson Pete, who recalled seeing Cara perform. The insane combination of talent and beauty was overwhelming to me. This hurts my heart so much. She first came to prominence among the young actors playing performing arts high schoolers in Alan Parker's Fame, with co-stars Debbie Allen, Paul McCrane, and Anne Meir. Cara played Coco Hernandez, a striving dancer who endures all manner of deprivations, including a creepy nude photo shoot. How bright our spirits go shooting out into space depends on how much we contributed to the earthly brilliance of this world. And I mean to be a major contributor, she says in the movie. Cara sang on the soaring title song with the chorus, "Remember my name, I'm gonna live forever, I'm gonna learn how to fly, I feel it coming together, people will see me and cry," which would go on to be nominated for an Academy Award for Best Original Song. She also sang on Out Here on My Own, Hot Lunch Jam, and I Sing the Body Electric. 3 years later, she and the songwriting team of Flashdance, music by Giorgio Moroder, lyrics by Keith Forsey, and Kara was accepting the Oscar for Best Original Song for Flashdance, What a Feeling. The movie starred Jennifer Beals as a still town girl who dances in a bar at night and hopes to attend a prestigious dance conservatory. It included the hit song Maniac, featuring Beals' character leaping, spinning, stomping her feet, and the slow-burning theme song. "There aren't enough words to express my love and my gratitude," Kara told the Oscar crowd in her thanks. And last but not least, a very special gentleman who I guess started it all for me many years ago. To Alan Parker, wherever you may be tonight, I thank him. The New York-born Kara began her career on Broadway with small parts in short-lived shows, although a musical called The Me Nobody Knows ran over 300 performances. She toured in the musical Jesus Christ Superstar as Mary Magdalene in the mid-1990s, and a tour of the musical Flashdance toured 2012 to 2014 with her songs. She also created the all-female band Irene Cara Presents Hot Carmel and put out a double CD with the single How Can I Make You Love Me? Her movie credits include Sparkle and DC Cab. Irene Cara, biography. Irene Cara Escalera was an American singer and actress. She was born on March 18, 1959, and passed away on November 25, 2022. Cara received both the Academy Award for Best Original Song and the Grammy Award for Best Female Pop Vocal Performance in 1984 for her performance of the song Flashdance, What a Feeling, which was used in the movie of the same name. Cara also contributed to the song's writing. Cara is also well known for her performance as Coco Hernandez in the movie Fame, which was released in 1980, and for performing the song Fame, which was the film's title song. Cara played the titular role of Sparkle Williams in the first version of the musical drama film Sparkle, which was released in 1976. This role came before her popularity with Fame. Early life. Cara is the youngest of five children and was the last to be born in New York City's Bronx borough. Her father, Gaspar Escalera, was a black Puerto Rican manufacturing worker and retired saxophone player. And her mother, Luis, was a Cuban-American usher at a movie theater. Her father was Puerto Rican and her mother was Cuban. Cara was one of four children with two sisters and two brothers. Irene Cara competed in the Little Miss America pageant when she was just 3 years old and was one of the five finalists. She started learning how to play the piano by ear, and she took music, acting, and dance seriously. When she was 5 years old, she started taking dance lessons. Her professional singing and dance career got its start on television shows broadcast in Spanish, where she debuted her work. She had her first television appearance at a young age on the original Amateur Hour, singing in Spanish, and on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. She was a regular performer on the educational program The Electric Company, which aired on PBS from 1971 to 1972, and she was a member of the show's band, The Short Circus. Cara released a Spanish-language record aimed at the Latin American market, as well as an English Christmas CD when she was a child. She was one of the performers at a large event paying tribute to Duke Ellington that also featured Sammy Davis Jr., Stevie Wonder, and Roberta Flack. Career. Cara has had roles in both on- and off-Broadway productions, including the musicals Ain't Misbehaving and The Me Nobody Knows, for which she received an Obie Award. Maggie Flynn, in which she starred opposite Shirley Jones and Jack Cassidy, and Via Galactica, in which she co-starred with Raul Julia. Love of Life, a daytime soap opera that aired in the 1970s, starred Cara as the first Daisy Allen. After that, she played the part of Angela in the romance thriller Aaron Loves Angela, and after that, she portrayed Sparkle, the title character in the film Sparkle. Cara received widespread critical praise on television for her work in the miniseries Roots, The Next Generations and Guyana Tragedy, the story of Tim Jones, both of which are regarded as among the best in their respective genres, and the volume 28 of John Willis's Screen World. She was recognized as one of the promising new actors of 1976. In the same year, a survey conducted by the readers of Right On magazine selected her the best actress. Kara completed her education at the Professional Children's School in Manhattan and received her diploma. Personal life. The couple got divorced in 1991 after getting married in Los Angeles in April 1986. Conrad Palmisano was a film director and stuntman at the time. Cause of death. Kara passed away on November 25, 2022 at the age of 63 in the comfort of her home in Largo, Florida.
Your mom and dad, we bought our cards together.
to kiss me. The only consolation that I got, I know for sure you'll miss me. It won't be long until you're home again, and we can share these magic moments. Until then, it's gonna be a cold, cold Christmas.
The sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.